You are tuned to Geek Speak on KDNK, Carbondale Community Access Radio, Glenwood Springs, Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley, and beyond. My name's Gavin Dahl, sitting in Geek Speak today with Matt McBrayer.
Hello, how are you today?
Good to see you.
Doing well.
Matt from Roaring Fork Help Desk, here to take your calls and answer your questions right now, live on the radio. Call 963-2976. 963-2976. We're taking your calls from now until 5 o'clock. Get in on the conversation right now. 963-2976. How many radio stations are going to give you a chance to talk directly to the IT guy himself?
Exactly.
So what's been going on with you, man?
Well, so I was browsing some of the sites I check out on a daily basis to see what kind of interesting things are going on. And a security website, carbsonline.com, carbsonsecurity.com, was hit by a world record DOS attack. So it's a distributed denial of service attack.
World record.
That's
serious.
So 665 gigabits of traffic per second.
Oh God, that's so mean.
So, you know, if you have a modern computer with a gigabit Ethernet connection, you know, that's like almost 700 of those computers sitting there, you know, hitting your website as fast as they can. But more likely, it was probably, you know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of what we call IoT devices. So those are things like routers, security cameras, your refrigerator.
Internet-connected refrigerators.
Yeah, Internet of Things. So we have all these things on the internet, and people leave the default password authentication values with them. And so these people log in to their device and add in an additional piece of software that they have control of. So, for example,
like a Trojan horse.
Yeah. So they load in the software and it does, you know, sends out spam emails, or in this case makes, you know, millions of requests to a website all at once. And so it took them offline for a little while, and then Google was able to help them and get their and move their infrastructure to Google, and Google has been able to sustain 660 gigabits per second of traffic for the company at this point.
That's wild. And so we don't know who's doing it, but I mean, what are the likely, what does it usually turn out to be?
Well, that's an interesting set of problems we have now, because it's not the lone wolf hacker anymore. It's been economized, where people build, so a group of people, that are IT interested, go out and find all of these IoT devices, or, you know, routers with standard passwords or with known security flaws, and they just sit there and go through the internet and find all these things, take them over, and most people are none the wiser ever. And so then they have this botnet, and they will rent the botnet out to people and say, well, you have control of, you know, 10,000 machines, have, you know, send out trillions of emails or whatever they want
but
to
so
do.
But so is it a combination of it's a hobby plus a way to make money plus a way to kind of be a pirate? I mean, is it, why do that if on the other side of the...
Well, now it used to be that, you know, you'd do it because you could. Now I would say it's more of a economic thing. If I can take over 100,000 computers and refrigerators or whatever, because your refrigerator is now internet connected.
Right.
You know, so it's just whatever it's saying, well, I can, you know, make a lot of money as opposed to, you know, making $50,000 to $100,000 a year doing computer work.
If I had a smart refrigerator, which I don't, but if I did, what would likely be the impact on me? I wouldn't even know.
You may not even notice. You might get a depending on what kind of internet connection you have, you might get a call from your ISP saying, hey, there's something weird going on here, or you'd get an additional bill that says you've used, you know, a terabyte of data over the last month, as opposed to what you would normally go through. Maybe, you know, if you're watching movies and things, between 150 and 300 gigs a month, depending on usage and all those things.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're listening to Geek Speak on KDNK. Matt McBrayer from Roaring Fork Help Desk, your resident expert, available. And it looks like we have a call coming in. Let's do this. Caller, you are on the air live on KDNK.
Hey, this is Craig and Rifle.
Hey, Craig.
I have an interesting question. At least I think it's interesting.
We'll be the judge. No, I'm kidding.
Yes, you will. My wife and I both are on Roaring Fork Internet Users Group, Roth.net.
Okay.
She uses Thunderbird. I use Windows Live Mail. When my brother sends me pictures or attachments with just one brother out of Colorado Springs, I get his email. I get none of the attachments. She gets his email and all the attachments. I get attachments from everyone else in business. I get PDFs. I get pictures. I get all kinds of stuff. It's only from this one thing from my brother that I cannot get anything that he attaches.
Okay.
Any ideas?
Now, are you, so you have like a so-and-so at Roth.net account?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just out of curiosity, have you tried logging into that account through their web portal?
Yes, I have, but I don't remember my stinking password.
Okay.
Because my email, you know, automatically comes up.
Okay.
So
I think if you want, you can do. I think it's NriSoft. It's NriSoft. It's like an Outlook password recovery tool, and I think they may have it for Windows Live, and so you could get your password back without having to go to Roth.
I know my password for. I don't know what to get on Roth&Tug.
Okay, I think. Well, they just updated their website, but I think if you go to Roth.net, and then there's a little button at the top that says Webmail, and that'll take you to their webmail portal.
I did that.
Okay,
and then I called them to say I'm the administrator. They want the administrator to give permission, but they won't tell me how to do it to recover my password for my email through their webmail. So no one's answering the phone.
Okay.
So I just thought maybe you might know, give me an idea, why would it work on Thunderbird, and why would everybody else's in the world comes to me except this one from my brother?
Yeah. Let's see here. Well, is he using...
what's his domain? What's he sending from?
What's he sending from? What kind of computer is he sending from? Is he using, like, Mac Mail or anything else? What is it? What's his setup like? Do you know?
Hold on just a second. He uses a company one, so I don't know what they're using.
Okay, so it's probably something fairly standard then. But the next because company email usually just passes information through unless they've set up particular rules.
Right, he's at his name at hiscompany.com.
Right.
So,
what I'm asking is on the far side of that, on his computer, is he using like their webmail system? Is he using Mac Mail, Thunderbird, Outlook, Windows Live Mail?
I have no idea.
So, because what some mail clients do is they put it in line instead of as an attachment. So they basically make HTML. excuse me, your mail client can interpret HTML, which is the language of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if he's using a newer version of that language and putting the pictures in line, they may be invisible to from your perspective on Windows Live Mail.
Okay.
So it's like he might be on a 3.0 and you're on a 2.0. I mean, just for...
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, everybody else in the family that he sends it to gets them. And they're all on very different things.
Yeah.
You know, so some are on Outlook, some are on Gmail, some are on Comcast. And I'm the only one who doesn't get it, and my wife, who's on Roth, gets them.
That's strange.
Yeah. That's what makes me think that it's, you know, he's like, if he's on a Mac, for example, if you do Mac Mail and you create a new mail message, and then you can either go to, like, you know, File and Attach, and it might be under Edit. But anyway, you know, if you go to File, Attach, it puts the attachment in there. The other way to do it is to, you know, bring up the Finder window, find the file you want, and drag it into the message space, and that sort of attaches it and puts it in line inside of the message.
For him to do this.
Right. And so,
yes, well, he does, he emails all over the country stuff for the business that he's in. So, and he doesn't have, and he just laughs. He goes, "Craig, I send hundreds of these things almost a day to all kinds of places, and you're the only one that doesn't get it."
Well, and that's why I wanted to have you log into Roth and Tug's webmail to
see. I'm going to do that if they'll ever give me my email.
Well, I thought
my password. So.
Oh, I thought you had your. You said you had your password.
No, I don't have the one to get on the webmail.
Well, that should be the same as the one you set up in Windows Live, unless it's been forgotten.
Well, that's what I said.
Okay, so if it's been forgotten, you can do. There's a piece of software I use, and I don't know if it works for Windows Live Mail, but I know it works for Outlook and some other Microsoft products. There's an Outlook recovery tool, and so it goes in and pulls up your user information. It'll give you the POP3 information, username, password, everything. And so I think it's from NIRSoft, N-I-R-Soft.
Oh, you said NRI.
Yeah, I think it's NRI. I'll have to look it up real quick.
It's all right. It's not that big a deal. I'll keep calling. It just has been bugging me for a year and a half now.
Right, I remember you called in a while ago about this last time, or maybe 10 months ago or so.
Yeah.
So nothing, good memory, Matt.
Nothing has changed. Yes, Matt, thank you.
So
anyway, I just thought since someone else was at the helm, another IT expert, that might get a little...
He might be like a quarter or third geek.
No, yeah, I'm very geeky. I'm much more of a policy guy than an IT support guy.
We need a lot of is policy guys.
Well, yeah, it doesn't really help with your problem today, that's for sure.
Correct.
But yeah, thanks for the call, and we're going to free up that phone line at 963-2976. Matt, what is the status of Roth these days? How are they doing? It's really hard to make it as an independent ISP in this economy, you know? They're not even an ISP anymore, right?
No, they still do. I know that they're in Glenwood Springs. This spring they put in some new equipment to increase their bandwidth for their wireless services in the Glenwood Springs area. I'm not sure where else they are providing services at this point, but they are in Glenwood. They're doing their wireless ISP thing. So
are they partnered with the city of Glenwood for the Glenwood's broadband infrastructure, or is it two separate things?
I think they're getting their bandwidth through GSCBN.
Okay.
So, but I'm not sure exactly how that all plays out. I'm moving to Glenwood soon, so I'm going to learn a lot more about this very soon.
Yeah, I mean, it does bring up an interesting subject of what you should do for internet service in the Valley. I mean, I just moved here at the beginning of the summer, and we looked around, and where we live, just, you know, a few minutes from the radio station here in Carbondale, the CenturyLink speeds were just not even an option. I mean, it was so slow. And so, really, we felt like Comcast was our only choice, and I think that's not going to be good for the consumer interest when you have all your eggs in one basket.
Well, one of the things that happened is they had the antitrust. I don't remember when that was. I think it was like 1999 or 2000, where they had an antitrust with the phone companies, with like Quest at the time, and so basically what they would do is allow companies like Rough and Tug to resell DSL circuits to consumers, and that has that antitrust is now sunset, and so it's much more difficult for the small ISPs to resell those circuits now and allow clients to, you know, have a local company basically support the circuit, and then if there's actually something wrong with the circuit, the local ISP can, you know, talk to CenturyLink and go through it. But let's see, lost my train of thought on that one. So there's not running infrastructure is so cost prohibitive.
Right.
And there was an article about Google Fiber recently. They've run Google Fiber in several metropolitan areas. And there's one place in Tennessee where AT&T owns the overhead phone lines. And it took, you know, an act of God basically to have AT&T allow Google to do that. And I think they're still in litigation over that.
Well, I mean, the other reason that it seems like so many people want Google Fiber to come to town is you look at places like Austin, Texas, where there were already existing high-speed internet providers there, but they weren't hitting any sort of speeds at a cost price that made sense. And when Google Fiber announced, instantly those other networks started beefing up, and then when Google Fiber launched, the prices came down. So it's like even if you're not going to be a Google Fiber user, mm-hmm. as a consumer, it's going to help drive prices down and hopefully drive speeds up. That investment in middle mile,
the last mile is the terminology I've heard about fiber and other technologies, is, you know, figuring out that last mile. It's like, you know, where I live up towards Redstone, there's fiber 100 yards from my house, but I can't get to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because MCI laid it in the early 90s. And then the place I'm moving in Glenwood, I, you know, fiber's 300-400 feet away, and I know it's there, but I can't get to it because I'm in a residential area, and they didn't run conduit when they put in the residential area to allow for infrastructure upgrades. So the only way to even think about putting fiber into my house would be to get, you know, everyone in my neighborhood to sign a petition and say they're willing to pay, you know, $1,000 or something like that to tear up the lawns and put in fiber.
Right. It doesn't seem likely. But, you know, there are communities that are trying to do it themselves. And maybe next week we should even think about inviting on the IT guy from Rio Blanco County, because I guess they say Rio Blanco County. I got to learn my Colorado pronunciations. you don't say Buena Vista. It's Buena Vista. Anyway, but Rio Blanco is now going to do fiber to every home and business in their only two towns, Meeker and Rangeley. But the problem is, even with the infrastructure investment from the county and brilliant planning, they still don't have an ISP to come in and actually manage the services, because most governments, even if they're willing to do that infrastructure investment, don't want to be in the business of running an ISP.
So, yeah, it's because there's all kinds of problems with that that you have to deal with, and you have to have the manpower to go. You know, with my clients throughout the valley here, you know, things get dug up pretty often around here, at least so it seems.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we have to figure deal with that. You have to have the manpower to show up and go, okay, this fiber got cut, we need to clean it up, run new fiber however many feet, and, you know, make sure it's waterproof and bury it again.
You're listening to Geek Speak on KDNK. Support comes from your membership and from Louie the Computer Guy, providing PC and Mac repair, networking support, tutoring, and web design. Be secure, informed, and connected. 948-7992 for Louie the Computer Guy. And support comes from Umbrella Roofing, providing roofing contractor services, gutter installation, and architectural sheet metal fabrication for the Roaring Fork and Eagle Valleys. Umbrella Roofing can be reached at umbrella-roofing.com and 704-9130. The number to call us here, get your questions answered from resident geek Matt McBrayer, is 963-2976. 963-2976. We'll be live on the air and get help from the man himself from Roaring Fork Help Desk, Matt McBrayer.
Thank you. So I was thinking about what Google was considering, because they're looking at moving into more metropolitan areas, and they've said that they are probably not going to consider running fiber to the home. So they're looking at this last mile problem with some sort of wireless system to do that. So it'll be interesting to see what, and there's some really great wireless technologies that have been released recently to do that.
Yeah, and that's the other thing that Rio Blanco's doing, because of course they have this giant county with these huge square mileage, right? And really only two towns, municipalities in the whole county. So in addition to their fiber to every home and business in those two towns, they're also going to do this series of new towers with microwave signals, and they're going to do, you know, long range Wi-Fi to try to connect as many folks out in the boonies in the county as possible. So I think that'd be a fun guy to have on next week. Maybe we could see if he'll call in.
Yeah, that'd be very interesting.
I mean, he's definitely, you know, out at the forefront in terms of what local governments have done in terms of investing in infrastructure. City of Longmont being kind of, you know, a lot of people like me, you know, our favorite model of municipal fiber. But again, Longmont's got it pretty easy. The town is really central. They have their own public utility that is already operating there, has been for 100 years. And so when they decided to go ahead and do a bond, what's so interesting what happened with Longmont was they said, okay, we're actually going to go into debt to build this. As long as we get such and such a take rate, people signing up, then we'll make our money back. And they've had such a huge demand. The take rate has been double their projections. So they're saying, well, we're going to borrow even more money and build even more. And then their ability to pay it back off that debt is going to happen much faster because they've had such a huge take rate. Obviously, if Town of Carbondale was going to do that, how many total people are even going to sign up here?
That, you know, that comes down to how mad people are at the available ISPs.
Right.
So, you know, Comcast usually, they have that the 100 worst companies in the unit.
they win every year.
Well, they're usually top four.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, for most hated. But, you know, I mean, I think that there are really, I've met some really great people within the Comcast.
Absolutely.
You know.
I know some of the techs are great.
Right. Oh, at the tech level. And also some of the policy people I think, I met a guy who is one of the head Colorado Comcast guys who used to work for, I don't know if it was like John Kerry or Tom Daschle or something. He definitely has a public service background, and he's there to talk to government folks. But I feel like at the end of the day, the critique that I think is most that's fair to see Comcast is they have shareholders and they're in what people have called a harvest mode, where they're not in the business of doing huge amounts of investment back into their networks. They're in the business of making a lot of money. So, I mean, it's America. They have every right to do that. But I think that the thing that bugs me so much is, from a policy standpoint, the idea that the legislature decided 10 years ago that local governments aren't going to have to jump through a lot of hoops to do anything about this.
Mm-hmm.
So especially if you look at the rural Colorado communities, if you're stuck with one or no options for high speed internet and prices that aren't very competitive, and you want to do something about it, if you're a local government, you first have to go through an election to even have the right to talk about, to even go and get into consulting around what your options might be, let alone to actually spend public money. Yeah.
Well, then you have IPv4 exhaustion, which is already pretty much here, but IPv6 is catching up, so we'll be able to do that soon. Basically, there's 4.3 billion addresses available to everyone in the world on version 4, and then there's like 17 septillion addresses. Basically, you can put an addressable object every 10 centimeters over the entire surface of the Earth, and you still have some left over.
When you said septillion, it made me think reptilian, but separate subject. We'll get back to that.
Seven sets of right. Three zeros.
Right, no, I get it.
So
that's a lot.
As people like to say, they like to say a million trillion, which drives me completely bonkers, but that's a whole other dissertation.
I don't know if you happened to catch All Things Considered yesterday, but there was a discussion about the kind of politics around domains, and do you think that there are countries in the world that are trying to persuade the domain.
So ICANN.
Yeah.
So
body, the domain body.
Internet ICANN. Consortium of assigned names and numbers. And so you basically have to agree by their terms. And it's a American, let's see here. So the U.S. has a, kind of has their thumb on it. And then it's a U.S. corporation that is running all of that and runs the DNS system that, when you go to google.com or my website or anybody else's, you go out and look up that thing and get the address. And
like
so,
if I typed in rfhelpdesk.net?
Right.
Okay, go on.
And so it goes, your computer goes out, figures out what the IP address of that is, and in this case it's an IPv4 address, and it goes and my server says, oh, I know what to do with that request, and sends you the website. And so that's basically what your computer does every time you surf anything. And this may happen 30 or 40 or 100 times depending on the complexity of the website you're going on.
Mm-hmm.
May get pieces of information from a whole slew of different places.
Well, so do you think there are countries that are trying to convince ICANN not to, for example, have like .gay or other things that certain political interests would want to try to stop?
Well, those top level domains are, there's so many of there used to be, .gov, .edu, .com, .org, let's see, info was one of the older
ones.
And
.country initials, right? Like,
right, and then you got like ca.co, which is Canada Commercial, and
right.
Let's see here, and then you have what was it?
Wasn't Bitly originally like .ly used to be like Liechtenstein or not? It wasn't
yeah,
that, but it like
so. We've commandeered some countries' mm-hmm. TLDs, top level domains, like .tv, .ly, and maybe Liechtenstein. And a TV is somewhere, some little Polynesian country in the middle of the Pacific is .tv. And there's hundreds of them now. There's .support, .xyz, let's see here, .med. I mean, or .pro if you're a professional for the lawyers. There's thousands of them out there anymore. One of my favorites is .sucks.
That's the thing?
Yeah. So when that came out, there was last year, there was a whole bunch of companies, because it's like $1,000 to register one of these .sucks sites. So, and they went through and had a sign-up time where if you owned a .com, basically you could own the .sucks account.
Oh, so it was actually like making companies play defense on their own brand. So like Comcast might have had to go pay to buy Comcast.sucks or someone else wouldn't.
No, there was before it was allowed to go out into the public, large companies were basically said, hey, you have a large brand. Do you want to buy up the... I don't know if it was a purchase thing, but you know, do you want to have that out there or
right.
not? So they're given the option at least.
Okay, so McDonald's.sucks. We should check. I wonder if...
Yeah, we'll see if that one's
available. It's probably not active.
So, yeah, because it's a large brand and they were probably, somebody came forward with that. You're listening to Geek Speak on KDNK 963-2976. Have a few more moments before the end of the show here.
Yeah, I don't think McDonald's.sucks works.
Yeah. So, but there's so many... So it used to be where you could buy .net, .org, and .com and, you know, have it pretty well wrapped up.
Mm-hmm.
But now there's so many of them out there that you can, you know, branding's a much more complicated thing anymore.
Well, we are out of time just like that. I can't believe how fast that went by. We didn't really get into very much stuff today.
No.
But we had one nice call. Thanks for calling. Thanks for staying tuned. So KDNK's Geek Speak. I'm Gavin Dahl, and if you want to get in touch with Matt from Roaring Fork Help Desk, what's the best way for them to do that?
Go to rfhd.net or give me a call at 970-704-6725.
That's the one. Thanks.